Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict appeals for an end to all bloodshed and violence in Syria. A courageous obstetrician challenges the international community to focus on providing the health care that mothers in developing countries need and to which they have a right. And Vatican Radio's film critic shares his impressions of a new film that paints a psychological and emotional portrait of a young woman living a personal crisis. Pope Benedict XVI has appealed for peace in Syria and in Iraq. Speaking on Sunday to those gathered in the courtyard of the Apostolic Palace at Castel Gandolfo, the Pope called for an end to all violence and bloodshed in Syria. He said that he follows with concern the growing and tragic episodes of violence in Syria, where as many as 20,000 people have perished in more than a year of intense civil strife. And as Chris Altieri reports, Benedict also turned his thoughts to Iraq, where a series of deadly attacks took place across the country last week.
Pope Benedict XVI appealed for peace in Syria and in Iraq on Sunday.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, continuo a seguire con apprensione i tragici crescenti episodi di violenza in Syria.
Speaking to pilgrims and tourists gathered in the courtyard of the Apostolic Palace at Castel Gandolfo, the Holy Father said that he continues to follow with concern the growing and tragic episodes of violence in Syria, with the sad sequence of deaths and injuries among civilians. Pope Benedict also decried the large number of refugees and internally displaced persons the conflict has caused to be driven from their homes. The Pope went on to ask that all those thus affected be ensured the necessary humanitarian assistance. After promising his continued prayer and spiritual closeness to all those suffering as a result of the conflict, Pope Benedict added an urgent call for an end to all violence and bloodshed, and that in the broader community of nations no effort be spared in the quest for peace through dialogue and reconciliation for the proper political settlement of the conflict. The Holy Father also had prayerful thoughts for Iraq, where a series of deadly attacks took place last week, including coordinated bombings and terror strikes that claimed the lives of more than 100 people and wounded more than 200 others on a single day.
Possa questo grande paese trovare la via della stabilità, della riconciliazione e della pace.
The Holy Father prayed that the great nation of Iraq find once again the path towards stability, reconciliation, and peace. I'm Chris Altieri.
And joining the Pope's appeal to end violence in Syria, the Apostolic Nuncio to Damascus on Monday raised his voice in a heartfelt exhortation to the nation's religious leaders, urging them to come together with strength to pray and to work for peace. He also issued a warning to the warring parties and urged them to have the courage to undertake the path to a just political solution to the crisis. Speaking to Vatican Radio's Sergio Centofanti, Archbishop Mario Zanari said the Pope's appeal was of great consolation to the pastors and to the people of Syria.
The appeal of the Holy Father, like the previous one, for the cessation of the violence in Syria, and his solidarity with the sufferings of the people was of great consolation for the pastors, the faithful, and all the people.
And what is the situation in Syria today?
The situation is very, 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 very grave. It's a terrible situation, as we can see in some parts of Syria, especially now in these days in Aleppo, but also in Homs and in other parts of the country. The feeling in this moment among the people is of a great incertitude. And let me say, in these days, the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games was the joyful celebration, we can say, of the universal brotherhood. What contrast with the situation our brothers and sisters are living in this moment in Syria. Nevertheless, the celebration remains a sign of hope. The flame of universal brotherhood will never be extinguished by the fratricidal winds that are blowing in some parts of the world. It will be lighted here again with the help of the international solidarity.
And finally, what's your appeal?
After the reiterated and much appreciated appeal of the Holy Father, having myself experienced the good interreligious relations that exist in Syria, I would like to make an appeal to all the religious leaders of Syria, Muslims, Christians, and others. Come together, all of you, and with all the strength of your moral authority, launch a joint and severe warning to the parties, to the conflict, to stop in the name of God the violence and the repression that take the country to destruction, terrible sufferings, and death. Ask them to have the courage to undertake immediately and in all sincerity, with the assistance of the international community, the path to a just political solution of the crisis.
That was Archbishop Mario Zenari, Apostolic Nuncio to Damascus in Syria. A press release that happened upon my desk just a while ago informed me that according to the World Health Organization's 2012 statistics, 91% of maternal deaths are preventable and may be treated with essential obstetrical care. 91%. That's scandalous, to say the least. And reading on, the figures become more and more chilling. I discovered that due to lack of effective care during pregnancy and childbirth, 333,000 women die annually during pregnancy and childbirth. 99% of these deaths occur in developing countries, and in particular in sub-Saharan Africa. Well, the press release I am referring to was given me by Mater Care International, an organisation of Catholic health professionals dedicated to the care of mothers and babies, both born and unborn, through new initiatives of service, training, research and advocacy. Services which are designed to reduce the tragically high rates of maternal mortality, morbidity and abortion. I spoke to MCI's founder and executive director, Dr. Robert Wally, who happened to be in the Vatican for a series of meetings, he told me, directed at pushing for a charter of maternal rights.
What we were doing, and I'll continue for the next couple of days, is to promote a charter of maternal rights and what we call also the 91% solution. I'm an obstetrician, worked for a long time in Western East Africa, dealing with the awful problem of maternal mortality, mothers who die during pregnancy and who suffer birth injuries, all of which are preventable. And it occurred to me a couple of, end of last year, I think, to wonder about a charter of rights of mothers. So there's lots of charter of rights of women, but not of mothers. And I keep on saying, you know, mothers are women too, you know. Surprise, surprise. So I Googled it, and yeah, there was one. 1930. You know, very current, isn't it? So I thought, well, maybe there's a time for another one. And for that simple reason, that they only deal with women. They've neglected, and the world has neglected motherhood. They're put into a sort of a compartment over there of almost failures. But, you know, I think if we look at motherhood from the church's point of view, you know, the most intimate relationship that any human being has had with God is to carry God-made man in her womb, Mary. So maybe you could actually extend that a little bit the most intimate relationship that any human being has now is motherhood, because she carries the next generation within her, nourishing and nurturing them. So it's awfully important, really. And perhaps, at least, I personally don't think we're doing enough about it. Now, I'm an obstetrician, and I think there should be a heck of a lot more done about it.
Well, I was reading some of the statistics, and they're frightening. The OMS says that it was one in every 31 pregnancies results in death. This is in the year 2012. Is that possible?
Yes, absolutely. And in some areas, it's even worse than that. So it may go down to one in 15 or down to one in 7.
Obviously, in poor and developing countries, I would think.
Well, mothers are the poorest of the poor in every way. And, you know, they're often young. They don't have a voice because they're women. They're mothers and women. So they don't have a voice. And therefore, they don't complain or lobby or shout, where's my doctor, where's my midwife, where's the place I'm going to? They just do what comes naturally, so to speak, and deliver in their hut in the village. And they're optimistic, you know. When you're pregnant like that as a mother, you're optimistic. It's a happy event. So they're not expecting to die or to be injured. Obviously, when they do die, they don't have a voice except yours and mine. And therefore, we need as a church to be addressing this whole subject in a far, far more vigorous way, I think that's the right term, than we are doing. We've got sort of caught up in modern times. Now, look, the church was was the provider of healthcare for mothers. If you look at the obstetrical units in North America and Europe, even in Africa and so on, those sisters were there right from the beginning, and to a certain extent they still are, but less and less. And the bishops have to take up the slack in terms of keeping the hospitals going, and 40% of all the hospital beds outside of cities are run by bishops in the church. So, you know, it really is extremely difficult, and we can't just keep talking about argument or bemoaning the fact and throwing our hands up and saying it's awful, it's awful. Yes, it is, but let's do something about it. And sometimes we're all guilty, I think the world community is. It's not politically important, is maternal mortality, mothers dying, because in the Western world, they don't die, because we're all so well-trained, we've got all the gear and the facilities. But unlike AIDS, so if you're a politician, you've got to really be involved, otherwise you're dead politically, because people die in the Western countries. But they also die in Africa. But as no mothers die in the Western world, they don't get interested in... That's Africa, that's their problem, you know?
I see here you have on your press release quite a strong phrase. It says the 91% solution.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, look, everything is full of slogans these days. You know, the international community is promoting what they call abortion first, or the Safe Motherhood Initiative, or reproductive health. But when you look at what kills mothers through neglect, they die... hemorrhage, obstructed labour, they die of infection. All of these things can be prevented and treated. And they all occur during the last 3 months of pregnancy, during labour and delivery, and a week after. So that means what they really need is, like everybody else gets in Rome, is essential obstetrics. Because if you look at the statistics, all of what I've just said adds up to 91% of all maternal deaths could be treated. And we know that because they don't occur here.
And I think some of them very simply as well, couldn't they?
Reasonably simply, yeah. I mean, sure.
We're talking a lot about
high technology. No, cesarean section and trained midwives around to deliver them. And so what we're doing is challenging the world and saying, hey, the solution to all of this is the 91% solution. That's the catchphrase. And that's what we're looking for, help in developing the whole concept and to do demonstration projects to show that we do care and that we can do just as good medically and obstetrically and technically as anybody else. And that's what mothers want, like they do here.
Now, Professor Waller, you are the founder of
Mater Care
International.
Yeah.
And you do give voice to the voiceless, as you were saying, but you also give life to some very concrete projects around the world. You were telling me you're coming from Kenya at this moment, where you've been working for many years, I understand. Would you like to tell us about the projects on the ground?
What we are developing in Kenya is partly the end of a story, maybe it's the end of the beginning, to deliver essential obstetrics to a large rural area. And the idea started developing in Nigeria back in the sort of mid, late 80s, 90s. But it was very difficult at that time to do. It was fraught with, you know, other complications. Strangely enough, the things that cause mothers problems because they can't get to hospitals and things. But we then developed it in Ghana, and then now since 2005 in Kenya, in which you don't focus on building just a hospital. You focus on where the deaths take place, and they're in the villages. So you go there. You try and take as much of the hospital to where the mother is, and you do that with transportation.
Right, you wouldn't think that women would want to walk hundreds of kilometres to a hospital. Is that why you're going to the village?
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine if you are in some complication, you're bleeding after the delivery, and or you've got a baby that's coming the wrong way, or you've got some other problem. There's no taxis to jump into. There's no bus. There's no ambulance. If you're lucky, you get on the back of a bike or a motorbike. And, you know, you have some awful situations where a mother comes with a half-delivered baby, which is coming sideways instead of, you know, head first or feet first, which you can deal with. And the suffering there is immense.
You were telling me about these projects. You're taking the hospital to the villages, to where the most deaths do occur. And you spoke to me of Kenya, of Nigeria. Do you have a project in Ghana?
Yep. We don't stay forever and ever, amen. You know, we go there and we suggest this, work in partnership, because it's we may be from different cultures and backgrounds and so on, but we share one thing, and that's the faith. So we go there and work with what structures there are. And there are mission hospitals, but they need to have a look at how do they radiate out to the community first. And then, you know, we start off with the community. We try to get community interested, the mothers interested, the women interested in the project because it's theirs. Then you train the traditional birth attendants, ladies who are well respected in their communities. They're uneducated. They're not inexperienced. They're not unintelligent. They know exactly what the bad things are, but they don't know what to do about it. So we work with them. And then the other idea is to create parish maternity clinics where you don't need to go to a hospital and have a specialist or a doctor look after it. Midwives are just as competent. So normal deliveries would stay in the parish. And the complications then would, well, the identified, you can identify 85% beforehand, come to the hospital. And it's a strange phenomenon that you may have a life-threatening complication potentially when you go into labour, but up until that point, you feel fine. And so therefore, you can have what we call a maternity waiting home in the hospital, separate from the hospital, close by, you look after yourself and so on. And that saves money, in that you're not being looked after by in the hospital bed, nurses and so on. You're being looked after by your own. And you live according to the way you're used to, not into this sort of artificial environment of a hospital and the way it functions. You know.
You were speaking of the human right of being a mother.
Yeah.
But that automatically brings us to the human right of being a newborn baby as well, doesn't it? Because only saving the mother, you're saving a child. Maybe you're saving his life. Yep. You're definitely saving his mother.
And that's the whole point. The whole of this charter begins with the dignity of human life. And the baby is seen as gift, not as thing, not as a right. It's a gift, and therefore it's treated with great value and so on. And the mother is so absolutely necessary because she nourishes and nurtures that baby. And then you have to look at her respect for herself, her religion, her cultural background, her economic situation, and all those things. Which it's all about respect, isn't it? And her dignity, so respect for her dignity.
How have you been welcomed within these communities in which you've been working?
Yeah, by the community, I think, well, they're a bit unsure. They don't fully understand what we're about. They see hospitals and they all want to rush to the hospital. Sometimes they think it's the treatment there is going to come free. But obviously that's not possible. But you know, they'd have to pay something, but nobody who came who was destitute would be turned away. So the whole project, the whole hospital, is for the poor. And many people live as a nomadic existence, as pastoralists. They don't have money, but they have a great number of goats and cattle and stuff. So
hopefully they have a great number of goats.
Well, yeah, you're right in asking that because, or stating that, because in this area we're working, there's been a drought there for up to 6 years in places, and you can see it because not only did they lose the domesticated animals, but even in the national park, the animals, the big ones, have been dying. And it's really tough there. And of course, that leads to malnutrition, which complicates pregnancy and the growth of the baby while inside the uterus and so on.
I think we should just sit back in this, you know, in this very advanced, technologically advanced world we live in and just reflect on the fact that so many women in developing countries risk their lives for the most natural and the most important thing of life. Just let's remember the numbers.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at it, it's violence, really. You know, people forget that, you know, they understand doing violence against somebody when you sexually assault them or you shoot them or whatever. And that's commission. That's what you do. But also you can do violence. We say that every morning.
Neglect.
What I failed to do by
Absolutely.
Omission. And that's the tragic thing. We don't realise, and it's huge, the amount of omission, when we know. We've known 150 years what we have to do. But it's a question of motherhood in the Western world being of such low value in this day and age. And what we would like to do is we organise a meeting of our colleagues, our own obstetricians, every 2 years. We've had six here in Rome last September. And next year we were thinking about not having just a medical conference, but a celebration of motherhood.
Well, I think Italy is a good place to have that. Italians
love
mothers.
They love babies.
They love babies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's an important event because I was told that it's the 25th anniversary of Mulieris Dignitatem.
Right.
And my point, mothers are women too.
That was founder and executive director of Mater Care International, Dr. Robert Wally. And now Vatican Radio's film critic Peter Malone shares with me his impressions of a new film that paints a psychological and emotional portrait of a young woman living a personal crisis. The film is entitled Take This Waltz, and it raises some very common contemporary issues.
I, take this waltz, take this waltz.
Yes, it's a Canadian film, and it's written and directed by the actress Sarah Polley, who's been around since she was a young woman in all kinds of different films. She has a great talent and screen presence, but about 5 years ago, she wrote and directed a film which I thought was excellent, and it was called Away With Her. I don't know if you've come across it. It had Julie Christie in it. She got an Oscar nomination for Away With Her. She plays a woman, a married woman, who begins to suffer from dementia and goes into a home, forgetting a bit about her husband and fascinated then by one of the residents of the home. It's quite a poignant study of an older woman. Now, I was wondering what Sarah Polley might do for another film, and this is her second, written and directed, but it's about a young woman. And the same kind of portrait of a young woman in difficulties, especially with her marriage, whether to move away from him, referring to her husband. But for those who like a serious portrait, and also an exploration of marriage...
You met my husband.
He seems to love you very much.
He does, and I love him.
And somebody pointed out it's also an exploration of desire.
I want to know what you do to me.
Physical desire in a marriage and then the attraction from somebody outside the marriage.
Hi.
Hi.
Daniel, this is Lou. He's our neighbor.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
So... it really is taking some serious themes, not too over-seriously done. There are some comic touches in it. But I found it serious and interesting case study, I suppose I'm saying. And Michelle Williams is very, very good in the central role.
Yes, I was going to say it's starring Michelle Williams, who's been proving herself as quite an excellent actress.
Yes, I saw something on television the other day, which I'd seen years ago, and she's the young Sigourney Weaver's young daughter in it, and I hadn't realised that she had a career when she was younger. But by the time she played a wife in Breakback Mountain, I think she was emerging then as a character actress. And she was in films like Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cut Off, which are specialist films, but very, very good. And then last year she surprised us all by being Marilyn Monroe in My Week with Marilyn.
Didn't she receive an Oscar nomination for that?
She did, yes. And she was very persuasive in a lot of the sequences as Marilyn Monroe. You wouldn't dream, if you watch Take This Waltz, where she's a suburban housewife, that she could ever, you know, be Marilyn Monroe in another film.
As you were speaking of the film, it made me think of Revolution Road. That's also the story of a breakdown of a marriage.
That's a very interesting comparison. I hadn't thought of that. But yes, I think if you were doing a weekend on films with that theme, they'd be two, I think, that you could watch. This one is less dramatic or melodramatic than Revolution Road, which has a bit of a tragic ending. This one is rather low-key. One of the reasons why it's a bit low-key and humorous is that her husband is played, of all people, by the comedian writer Seth Rogen, who's often in those, you know, raucous, super bad kind of movies that perhaps our listeners don't frequent. He's very popular, but he's a genial presence in this. He's a chef, and he's preparing a book on cooking chicken. And he loves his wife, and she loves him.
I missed you.
Missed you.
But she encounters someone else, and that then raises all kinds of difficulties for her, especially. How does she handle it? And with the other man who tries to be respectful of her marriage.
I'm married.
Oh, that's too bad.
So I won't go any further in what happens. Complications arise, emotional complications, needless to say.
I feel like being out in the world with you. Can we spend the day together, please?
Yeah.
But as a low-key portrait of difficulties in marriage, in the film her age is 28. So it's of a woman in her 20s, 5 years married.
Well, from what you say, it sounds like a very poignant film for many women, I would say.
Yes, it's very much a women's film, writer, director, and Michelle Williams.
Life has a gap in it, it just does. You don't go crazy trying to fill it.
So I think, you know, a male audience like myself are rather more observers of what's going on rather than an immediate empathy. So, yes, you're probably right, a women's audience. Whether they like her or not, whether they agree with her or not, it's raising themes that are very contemporary and are often problems in marriage. So, yes.
What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of wondering if I'll miss her.
The title is from a song, Take This Waltz, which is played at a very crucial time in the decision-making of the central character.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.